Computer, initialize holosuite.
Good evening, and welcome to another episode of The Fire Caves, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Perry.
And I'm your host, David. Tonight we're talking about Season 5, Episode 17, A Simple Investigation. Before we continue, you can find us on Facebook, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and X as The Fire Caves, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast.
That is correct, and as I say every single week, you should find us and follow us because we're a pretty awesome time. I think you're going to enjoy our show overall, especially if you enjoy Deep Space Nine, and if you're just a fan of Trek at large and haven't really paid a lot of attention to this show, hopefully we give you enough little tidbits and insights to make you want to go watch it. Now, I say all that, and then I must now immediately say I'm sorry for this episode because I feel like, as I always try to find a word or term to describe the episodes, I feel like for this one, it's going to give me kind of the cringeworthy episode. A lot of moments where I felt like I was just going, ugh, a lot here and watching this one tonight. And we're going to get into that, of course. So just be prepared. So if this is the one that you started on, one, why? Why did you jump into this episode as your first episode to watch Star Trek Deep Space Nine? Yep. Please turn this off and go watch the first season and join us later. But two, if you are familiar with this episode already, if you're a fan of the show already, I'm pretty sure once we get into the conversation, you will understand. Okay. Now, of course, before we do all that, we always like to check in every week. So starting it off, David, how was your week?
Week's been fine. Work's been busy. This is President's Day weekend for us, so the sales are always important during this time of year. And it's been good to see a little more business because it's been slow lately. It's been noticeably bad. So that's been good. I forgot to mention last week that one of the shows I had watched was The Lincoln Lawyer on Netflix. So I meant to mention that. It's a good show. I don't think I would say it's great. It's not bad. It's good. It's a, if you need to kill some time and you need a show to watch, Lincoln Lawyer. Good show. I also last week mentioned that I reread the book Catch 22. And so all this past week, I've been watching the Hulu show that was directed in part by George Clooney. And unfortunately, I can't recommend the show. If you read the book, you'll recognize like the plot elements every now and then, but it's not a comedy. I don't know what they tried doing. It's too serious. It's not a comedy. The whole point of the book is that it's an absurdist comedy. It's a dark comedy because it's all these terrible things happening in war. And the show just doesn't hit the right note. It doesn't know how to get it. And I was trying to figure out, like, how would I have done it? Like, how would I have fixed it? And I was – did you ever watch the show Arrested Development, Perry?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know how they have the narrator who's played by – I can't remember at the moment – the Ron
– Jason Bateman, right?
Well, Jason Bateman's in it, but they have – the narrator is the director whose name I can't remember, the redhead. Daughter is Bryce Dallas Howard.
Ron Howard.
That's it. Ron Howard is the one who does the voiceovers, and it's great because it's comedic. It you know, puts a pin in all of the funny moments. If this show Catch 22 had done that, given the show a narrator, someone to put a pin in all the comedic moments, that would have helped it a lot. That's the thing that's missing more than anything else. And George Clooney is great because George Clooney loves playing those ridiculous comedic characters, and he is a bright spot in the show, but otherwise it's a dud. So anyway, that's what I've been watching last week. But there is one thing I want to show you. I know it's rare for me to ever pull something out to show you, but I want to show you something.
Okay.
Do you know what this is?
Is that an ornithopter?
Ornithopter, baby. Yeah, Bot built the Dune Ornithopter this week. It's super fun. You can flap the wings, make it, you know, flap. You can pull the wings back and go into a dive. It's great. It took me all day to build at work the other day.
Oh, the joys of working in a mattress store. Oh, man, baby. Just devote yourself to your hobbies. Man, yeah. I have to admit, I do miss that.
Yeah. Yep. It came Wednesday morning and Wednesday at work when I wasn't busy, otherwise doing something, putting that together. So that's what my week was like. How about you? What's up with you?
Well, no model building, that's for sure. I'm just still kind of moving things around, of course. I don't know if I talked about on here or not the potential that I may have to have a little, you know, surgery done or whatever. I think if I did,
you mentioned it to me at least.
If I didn't,
yeah,
I know that we were talking. I just can't remember if we were talking like this or whatever. Right. So if I have mentioned it, just a brief update. I still have another test I have to take before they know for sure. But the first exam went very well, so hopefully I won't have to. So we got to wait for this other test and then we'll see. But other than that, I'm fine. I'm like, I'm not dying or anything. I don't want anybody thinking, oh, my God, he's going to whatever. No, I'm fine. other than that, I have been I'd said last week that I was in this kind of campaign against the new Halo show. And they're just now launching the second season. Have to admit that got a tad bit worse because they've really kind of leaned into the promos being geared in that same language. You don't need to be a fan of Halo to enjoy Halo. And it's so weird to see such a very clean split between like the fan base, because it's like everyone who says that they enjoy it also openly admits that they've never played the game, they've never read a book, they've never done anything with Halo. As far as they're concerned, it was only ever the show on Paramount. But then to anyone who's even remotely familiar, like, oh, I played the game years ago when the first one came out when I was in high school, all that, any of those people who have any knowledge of the game and the material at all, when they watch it, they all hate it. All hate it. Like, it's just, everybody hates it. And I just think it's so interesting that they keep leaning so hard into this whole, it's Halo, it's Halo, it's Halo. And it's just like, everyone agrees it's not. Right. Again, call it anything else. And it's
it just, solves the problem.
It would have been fine.
Also
right. It really does solve the problem.
Yeah.
So this week, as I said, I leaned into that a little bit, and it was pretty interesting because I found some people who have created a YouTube channel where they have interspliced the stuff from the show so far with, like, the cinematics from the game at different points. And they've done some remarkable editing because there's, like, several scenes in the show where the person who is supposed to be Master Chief has removed his helmet, which if you're in any way familiar with the game, you know that that's a major no-no. He never takes his helmet off. So, like, they've cut all those scenes out and interspliced them with the Master Chief from the game and everything. And it's just, it's made it so much better. And it's, right, and it's just so funny. And then, like, you know, they've cut out all the unnecessary, you know, civilian drama and whatever that, again, was never a part of Halo. It's just something they incorporated in for whatever reason. I don't know. So, like, they've cut a lot of that out. It's a nice intercut. I mean, you can clearly tell that it was, you know, fan-made or whatever, but it's so much it's weird how much that does elevate the show. And it's like, see, if they just had stuck to the source material, it's already there. It's everything that you need is already there. Just make it live action.
Right.
I had to pull myself away from that. I was going to start reading The Count of Monte Cristo because we talked about it. And that was just, it's been in my head and I really want to. And I decided, though, instead of reading it, I think I'm going to go the audiobook route. I normally don't do audiobooks. I don't really have like a block against audiobooks, or I think they're bad or anything like that. It's just something I've never really considered before.
And you've already read the book recently. It's not like it's your first time or anything. Yeah.
Right. And so I thought that it would be interesting to go that route with something that I am very familiar with, give it a listen this time, and just see how it, triggers my memory in with the story and everything like
Right.
that. And just give me something to do when I'm like going out for a walk, or when I go to the gym and I'm doing my, my warm-ups or whatever, to have this to listen to before I switch over to music and stuff, of course, and just find different ways to get the story, like, in without having to just be sitting
Right.
stationary and reading.
Right.
And if it goes well, if I feel like it goes well, I may do other books like that. I know that all of the books from the Expanse series are available at least on Spotify right now. So if this goes well, I may do the sixth or seventh book as audiobooks. It's a nice way to, like, 'cause I'm still going to
Right.
buy the books, so it'd be a nice way to keep my bought copy nice and crisp and fresh, and
Yeah.
have it that way.
Right.
So,
Nice.
but other than that, it's been a pretty solid week. I'm looking forward to next week, because in 7 days, I get a little wiser. I get a little, extra pip on the collar, as it were, for a nice Star Trek reference. I become a year older, so we will see how that goes.
Very good.
But we're not here to talk about that. We are here to talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine and this cringeworthy episode. So,
So I guess you don't want to give
David,
the recap this week.
I mean, I will. I just wanted to know if you wanted to do it. I like to
I'll do it.
ask.
I'll
I
do
didn't
it.
want
Yeah. I thought
to.
it's the
Okay.
Odo episode. I thought you were to jump all on it, but I'll do
And
it.
I think that's part of the reason why I find this episode so kind of, because it's just, there are certain, again, we'll get into that, but there are just things about it that I feel like are a departure from the character that fit something else that I find happens a lot in 90s TV shows. So we'll get
Got it.
there.
Okay. Well,
But
I'll
go
do it.
ahead,
Okay.
fire away.
All right. So, guys, this is season 5, episode 17, A Simple Investigation. And it is an Odo episode. Before we get to Odo, a man from the race, oh, the Atovid.
Idanians.
Idanians, that's it. Idanian, a man named Tovid.
Tarvin.
Oh, Tovin, sorry. He is a man who is killed by two strange aliens. We don't know exactly who they are, but they say they need to find the woman. Well, Odo meets a woman in Quark's, and she seems interested in him. She mentions that he has bedroom eyes, and he is highly affected by that. No one's ever complimented him on his physical features before, and he's very, very enamored. And soon finds this woman, Arissa, is involved in some sort of conspiracy on the station. She was trying to meet the man who was killed, and so when he takes her to the man's quarters after having caught her trying to hack into the station's roster, if you will, to find out where the man was, they find that the man is dead. He was phasered, and it wasn't set to stun, it was set to kill, and so the man's gone. And so Arissa, who had originally been saying something about, oh, this man was helping me find my daughter and he was just helping me, confesses that she is actually someone who works for a crime lord in the Orion Syndicate, if I'm saying that right. Drain, to be exact. And she was meeting with this man to, well, she had this sense that she could trust him, and she was trying to use this guy to help her leave the syndicate. But of course the guy's dead. All that's left is a crystal, a data crystal, with some information that she is able to retrieve from a locker that this guy had. Of course, Odo, knowing that he can't trust her yet, that she's been lying about who she is, had followed her, and she confesses all this and confesses about the data crystal. And so Odo, being very generous to Arissa because he's attracted to her, decides that he is going to give her safe quarters in his own quarters to keep her safe from being killed by the syndicate. And while she's in his quarters, they, of course, express interest in each other and eventually spend the night. They have a night together. Long story short, it turns out that Arissa is actually a member of that same race that the first guy was killed from. Idanian, excuse me. It turns out that she was sent by the Idanians to go infiltrate Drame's organization and find out information so they could take him down. She's been undercover for the last 2 years, but all of her memories were removed and replaced so that she could effectively live out this part as a undercover operative. The data crystal, it turns out, is actually all of her memories that were supposed to be given back to her by the guy who was killed. She doesn't know this. It turns out that one of the Idanians comes to the station to tell Odo this, but Arissa, even though she spent the night with Odo and they were intimate and they were, you know, they'd like each other, she has made an agreement with Drame to exchange the data crystal in exchange for her being allowed to leave. Now, of course, Drame has decided to back out of that agreement, and so his two assassins are told to take the information, to take the crystal, and then kill her. And while she does try to give over the crystal and leave, they are about to kill her when Odo shows up to save the day. Her memories are replaced, and it turns out that she is a married woman back on her home planet, so she cannot stay with our dear Odo. So, poor Odo, who had, for the first time, had been intimate with a woman, is now, once again, alone in the galaxy. That's about it.
Yes. That is essentially the episode. And again, if you want to get all of the details, you can go and watch the episode on Paramount Plus. All of Deep Space Nine and the other Trek shows are there for your viewing pleasure. So go watch it, and then you can come back and see us and talk with us, and we will go from there. So now, yes, we're going to get into this episode, as always. And yeah, again, David, you're up. What did you think of this episode, first time viewer?
Well, I'll put it this way. So knowing that you don't seem to care for this episode, I was, again, a little surprised because I was like, Odo's Perry's favorite character. But you're saying you don't like it because you don't think it jives with Odo's character, it sounds like.
I don't.
So I'll just say this. The whole time I was waiting for a twist of, like, turns out she can't be trusted the whole time. It was all a ruse the whole time. Odo dropped his guard. He's going to regret it. And so I was waiting for a big twist like that, and it's not what happened. It is a different twist. Turns out that she's just been an undercover operative, and her memories were affected. And so she's still married. I mean, she's been undercover for over 2 years, and, like, I mean, that's quite the marriage. It's 2 years undercover, babe. I'll see you in a bit. You know, come back when you're ready. It's a little strange. I felt like that was kind of tacked on to, like, force her to leave Odo. And because I knew Odo, or at least I had never heard any inkling of anything happening with Odo, and knowing that most of the time the episode has to revert to the status quo, it's only rarely that episodes will allow any sort of major plot point to, like, affect the show in any major way. I mean, heck, even 2 episodes ago, we had the Cardassians joining up with the Dominion, and nothing's happened in the last 2 episodes that would be greatly affected by that. These episodes could have been totally removed from those elements of the storyline so far. So anyway, I wasn't all that invested in it in the sense that I sensed there was going to be a twist coming. I knew that this probably wasn't going to last beyond the episode. I was happy for Odo in the sense that, like, yes, he's lonely, but I also feel like, well, I mean, he's a changeling, so any like, to put it quite bluntly, when she's complimenting him on his prowess, oh, I didn't realize this was your first time, I was like, okay.
It's such a contrived bit of dialogue that happens in these, whenever they do these types of scenarios, and that's part of that thing that just kind of gets me, you know, my backup against the wall, I guess, here. You know, it's just, I don't like it. And this was kind of the thing that they did a lot in, you know, not just 90s television shows, but a lot of older shows do that when they have these moments where you have, let's just call them a late bloomer who finally gets their moment.
Yep.
The fact that, even despite the fact that they've had you know, no experience, fantasies only, and whatever else, that they are somehow these next level lovers, mm-hmm. being able to satisfy their partners, yeah. and so forth. Like, you can, I mean, go back and look at any coming of age movie, teenage whatever movie from the 70s, 80s, and beyond. There's always that one character who they're just obsessed with finally having their first time, and then it's this earth-shattering experience, like, every time. And this is something that obviously Star Trek continued here in a kind of, you know, awkward way, to say the least. Because, yeah. I mean, it's I feel like it's something that plays so well in those movies like I was describing, because we are talking about, you know, teenagers, and we all understand that as we grow up, this kind of rite of passage thing here. Versus in this, we're seeing this person who, I mean, neither one of them are teenagers. You can say whatever you want to about Odo's age and appearance, and, oh, changelings don't age or whatever else. Cut it out, all right? He's not a teenager, all right? Let's just say that.
Sure.
And be done with, yeah. it. So, I mean, the story could still work with him being a person who is lonely, who feels otherwise isolated because he's not like the other people around him, and here's something that he has wanted but couldn't work out the mechanics of because he is so different. Right. All of those things still would have been great beats. We didn't need to add in this extra touch of, oh, he's also a virgin too. Like, that wasn't necessary at all. And it's just like... And I feel like it diminishes everything else that they established that came before it, because they made such a, you know, a blatant throwing that out there. That conversation could have been intimated. It did not need to play out at all. And we need to see them, you know, her, oh, no, not at all. We didn't need, no, come on. That wasn't necessary. And for a show like Star Trek, where they always are trying to be a little bit more... cerebral about things, I feel like this is kind of a lowbrow moment for them. So yeah, just I don't like it. Yeah, I'm gonna stop there because there's some other things I could continue to say. But I did want to talk about Arissa here, who is played by an actress named Dae Young. What did you think of Arissa?
As an actress, I mean, I would say looks like she's in her 40s, and I feel like Renee Auberjonois was probably in his 40s or so in this time the show was being produced. So she felt like the right age for his character. You mentioned, like, oh, he's not a teenager. Certainly a Renee Auberjonois isn't, and so I feel like they paired well in that sense.
Yeah.
I did feel it was kind of strange, though, like, the way they have them kiss in his room, like... It's his room, it's private, and then she had just told him about, like, she had had to prostitute herself when she was younger in her fake memories.
That whole scene went on way too long.
Right. Like, yeah. Part of me almost wishes that instead of them having all of this, you know, sweet bedtime talk, it had cut, like, the kiss is what the climax of the episode was. Like, he finally kisses a girl, basically, and that's when, that's the moment. He's gone beyond just this, you know, intellectual conversation. He is being more intimate. He's talking about stuff. As opposed to just moving, like, the fact that they go all the way, that's for me what, if I were to critique the episode, it's like, that's always what has to happen. They have to go to bed. As opposed to make it a little something simpler, a little bit sweeter, you know, maybe, let me put it this way. The whole time, I knew there was going to be some twist. And so the whole time, yeah. I was like, Odo's going to be mad at himself by the end of this episode. I'm pretty sure there's going to be something that goes wrong. And so yeah. I felt bad for him the whole time. That's what I was feeling. Yeah.
I feel like all the beats for this episode are off. You know, this episode would have served better as a longer two-parter episode, but only because we didn't get the complexity of the story we needed to make us really care about the interaction between these two characters. And that's saying something, considering one of the characters is a main character on the show. You know, that whole scene with them, taking the slow steps one step at a time up to each other, went on for entirely too long. You know, they were they were across the room and had to cross this distance, and we had to sit there and awkwardly watch them cross the distance. It went from being something that was romantic to suddenly it made you as the audience feel intrusive. And then all of a sudden the music comes in late, the kiss begins, and again the moment, for at least for me as a viewer, was totally lost, and I felt like I was watching something inappropriate. Yeah. You know, like I should not be spying on these
two having bedtime individuals talk.
You know, his as it's pointed out here just a minute ago, yeah, his interactions with Loxana Troy were far better and more thought out and complete than what we get here with Arissa. Now, I don't necessarily blame Arissa, the actress who played Arissa, Ms. Dae Young, for that. I did want to bring her up because she is a bit of a Star Trek legend. She's appeared multiple times across the franchises as different characters, of course. Some of you might remember her from the Star Trek Next Generation episode, The Masterpiece Society, in which she played Hannah Bates, the blonde scientist who didn't want to go back when her people lived in that bubble, on that planet, and so she didn't want to go back there. Mm. So she was Hannah Bates in that. She's Arissa here. She was an alien called Kayla in an episode of Enterprise. And she was, I feel like she was someone else. No, that's it. I think those are it. Arissa the human, and then Arissa the Idanian. Yeah. So she's been in the makeup chair a bit, you know, here, and she pops up frequently as that same kind of character, the love interest with the questionable past, or she's this woman who she's beautiful, but she's got some kind of edge about her for whatever reason, and then we have to uncover what her real motivations are, you know. She's played that character quite successfully in the Star Trek verse, so not surprised at all that she popped up here. Doing her thing, as it were. But yeah, I just feel like this episode would have, like, you're absolutely right, I agree with you, if they had given us more of developing the storyline, especially when the other Idanian shows up in Odo's office and is talking about how he's looking for her, and he says, she's not who you think she is. Okay, great way to ramp up the drama, but then in the very next scene we get the reveal and it's like, whoa, it was a legend. Like, we should have had more time of Odo being suspicious, like having to fight those urges of he knows he's fallen for her, but at the same time, can he really trust her? He doesn't know enough about her, and he's a great investigator, so he's got to be suspicious of her a little bit, this person with a illicit data port in her neck that are used only for people who are doing, you know, terrible things. Mm-hmm. And what's this beautiful woman doing with this data port? Like, we didn't get enough of that at all in this story. So yeah, it really just kind of falls short. They were trying so hard to get us into this whole romantic mindset that they really did drop the ball on the rest of the story that they had worked up here. And that's another reason why I don't really like this episode.
Right. Yeah, for me, it what I'm getting at with like the whole kiss thing, like, I wish it was just a kiss, is I have an issue with the way I feel like relationships have developed on Star Trek, and this goes back to TNG. Picard hooks up with what's her face on Ryza, who is Vash, who was in season one of Deep Space Nine with Q, the one episode with Q showing up. And I just feel like that's a perfect example of, like, the characters that some of the women that our men fall in love with are always these bad girls. They're dangerous. They're femme fatales. I would love to just have a sweet relationship. You know, just like...
Well, you've got Riker and Deanna.
Well, that's my point, though, is, like, they're on and off again. They can't figure out what they're doing. And then you have Picard and Crusher. It's the same problem. And now you have Dax and Worf, and they're bickering with each other even in this episode. And I'm like, you guys aren't convincing me that y'all are in, like, this sweet, loving relationship.
Well, beyond Worf and Jadzia, because, I mean, Klingons do things way different. I can get your point. I feel like this is one of those things that Star Trek tends to handle wrong. I think they pick up on aspects of relationships that I guess are a bit dated, antiquated, maybe, because it is always this whole either the woman just completely swoons over our Kirk type, you know, and loses her senses, or yeah, there's this weird kind of antagonism that happens between them, which eventually it's like that old playground saying, oh, they just pick on each other because they really like each other. You know what I mean? And that's kind of how these all seem to have, they all have the same kind of notes. Right. The only one I would say that doesn't really fall into that would be Sisko and Cassidy. But even theirs has the touch of the bad there with her being duped by the Maquis to draw him out. And you know, she was never really like a foil for him per se, but they did kind of taint their relationship by making her a criminal.
Right.
So,
and like O'Brien, you know, has Keiko. And there are moments where it's sweet, but I do feel like it seems like more often than not, they lean into like this, she's exasperated with O'Brien's...
The shrew wife. Yeah. Right. She's nagging him all the time.
Yeah, O'Brien's just kind of...
Yeah.
Kind of banging his head up against the wall.
Henpecked.
Yeah, and I just, like, here with Odo in particular, let me put it this way. Odo is the changeling. Odo's sense of intimacy is the great... What is it? The great sink or
the great link.
Sink, link, same thing. The great link. And so he describes that to Orisa, and he even does it briefly. She's like, you know, wish that I was a changeling and we could meld. And he's like, don't let that stop us. And then he kind of does it. And it was just a little weird because it's like, I felt it was a little forced.
Yeah, what's going on there?
Well, I felt it was a little forced because it's like, it's not the same thing. Like, let me put it this way. The whole idea that was introduced in TNG was that all of the humanoid species actually originate from this one species that, like, somehow seeded themselves when they died. You know, this ancient alien race, with the archaeology episode with Picard, somehow seeded themselves across the galaxy, and all of the races are technically sourced in that one race. And for me, the idea that the changelings are therefore alien, I mean, maybe they would argue that it's somehow the same way. I mean, we do have, obviously, humanoid races in the Gamma Quadrant, so maybe they were able to expand beyond just the Alpha. But my point is the changelings do seem to be alien in the sense that they are a unique species. They don't originate from the same way as the humanoids. And so, for me, I feel like Odo... melding or having this intimacy with a human, okay, maybe that's fine, but for me, I felt like it should have been, like, again, that's the whole point, the whole problem with him being, like, an expert from the first moment. It's like, no, he's only done his own version of things. Like, I would rather, here's what I'm getting at. I want to, if I want to see Odo be intimate with someone, I want to see the awkwardness of this alien species trying to be intimate with another alien species, that they don't have that. They're trying to find some version of it. And that might be really awkward, to be very clear.
No. So you're actually kind of right, spot on, because the... writers and producers for this episode kind of felt the same way. Ronald D. Moore, who obviously wrote a lot of episodes and helped develop a lot of episodes for Deep Space Nine, and of course later goes on to do a little show called Battlestar Galactica. Anyway,
that's true. That is a major part of the plot of Battlestar, is the alien romances. Okay, keep going. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, he did say that he felt like this was something that they should have actually done when Odo was humanoid, when the changelings forced him to be humanoid. Yes. They felt like it would have worked better there versus now, him trying to work his way through, you know, feeling this out when he's got this otherness about him once again. And they did think that that time had really kind of passed, or they had missed an opportunity, because he did get his, you know, his abilities back, relatively soon following that incident. So yeah, I think they were kind of on the same, you know, point with you there, that it would have been I think it would have been a bit more relatable had they done it that way. And then that the firstness of things, that virginity quality of things, would not have rung so false with us because of the fact that we would understand he is a humanoid now. He is experiencing things for the first time, right. You know, not just the quirkiness of hunger or being drunk or really, in his case, crippling depression, which was the only thing that he was really feeling in full effect when he had his powers taken right. away. But yeah, it would have definitely made more sense, and it would have allowed him to, you know, really come to terms with his feelings for Kira.
Right.
And so what we're supposed to see here in this episode regarding Kira and Odo is definitely that they have both, you know, that he has moved beyond his feelings for her, and that they just are enjoying this friendship once right. again. But I don't know about you, but that's not what I saw here.
Okay. In what sense?
All right. So here's my thing. As you know, I watch a lot of older shows, late 80s, early 90s in particular. There always seems to be this notion that you can have two characters who are infatuated, in love, whatever, with each other, right? And they may initially try or, you know, start to communicate those feelings, but then because of the intensity of said feelings, they find some way to muck it up, and then they can't be together for a little bit of time. Right. So then they have these weird, so they were together, then they branch off and they go through these weird parallels where they're in relationships with other people, which seem to be okay relationships, but there's always something that eventually draws them back together, you know? But it's like, it's very important in the storylines of these shows that when the characters separate and go, you know, one goes to one relationship to another one, or, you know, they go through a series of relationships and breakups or whatever, that they stay in this orbit and always being kind of like aware that there is still this latent feeling attraction or whatever to the other person. Right. I feel like we get a touch of that in this episode for the first time though, from Kira, because she's talking to Odo about, you know, him meeting this woman, and, you know, when she's kind of teasing him a little bit because he's looking at himself in the mirrors or reflective glass or whatever. And when he tells her why, her reaction is a little more visceral than I would expect. And then what she says to him too, because he was like, I don't see it. And she tells him that the woman who told him that was very perceptive. So it's just like, that's not something that you would necessarily say to your friend. Yeah. You might comment that your friend has nice eyes or whatever, yeah. But if someone says, this person told me I have bedroom eyes, my response would not be, they're very perceptive.
Yeah. I don't even know what that not means. That's the other thing too. Right. Like, what does she even mean by that?
Right, which means if she, to me, that's saying that not only does she agree, but that she's thought of that before. Mm. She's had that internal thought herself. For the other person to see it, that's what makes them perceptive. It's not just that they said they have nice eyes. Anybody can say they have nice eyes, but she gave him a very specific description, and Kira agreed. So that was my first part. And then if you continue to watch, like, Kira is also very much interested in his development along this path with the woman. She's also becomes a little defensive at the idea that he spent all night with her in the quarters when Dax and Kira are gossiping about it. She's like, oh, no way. He's just doing his job. She's intentionally blinding herself right. to the realities of the situation.
Okay.
You know? And even a couple of times when, like, she sees him, whatever, she's giving him those kind of furtive looks from the background that I guess you had to be watching the episode, and you would see that she's looked back at him a few times when he's doing things. So it's almost like she's beginning to consider him in a different light. Now, we know already that Odo has long held feelings for Kira, right. and I think that she has become aware enough And through this episode too, I think she's beginning to kind of notice there's something. She might not be able to say what it is or whatever. We also know that her relationship with Shakar is kind of, you know, flat. You know, we haven't seen Shakar. She hasn't mentioned Shakar. The last time we even talked about Shakar even a little bit, she was returning from her trip with him, and she seemed quite somber. Not the you know, jovial personality of a person who just spent a lovely time vacationing with their significant other, you know? So, and we haven't seen him since. We haven't even really heard a mention of him since. So I'm thinking that that's what this is. They're trying to do it in their own, you know, Trekified version. But it's like, in order for the hero couple to really get together, they both of our characters have to go through these stages of development and experience before they are then ready for each other. And these are the milestones that we're watching in this episode that Odo has to jump over to be now ready for Kira. Kira is kind of, well, not kind of, is there physically, but now she needs to have her mental hurdles cleared. And I feel like we're beginning to see the foundational work for that.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So you're saying that if there is to be a relationship between Odo and Kira, we're getting some things prepared for that. Is that what you're getting?
Right. Okay. Like, yes, because they want us to believe that Odo and Kira, even when it happens, are destiny's fated couple, right? But in order for that to occur, as with any other couple in the history of anything you've ever watched on TV ever, that person can never be the first love. You're never still with your first love for the rest of your days. Because how else are you ever going to get those impassioned speeches where they talk about how they thought they knew what love was, but they didn't realize until they were with this person. And they had to go and be with this person first before they realized it was them all along. Right. Come on, you know what I'm talking about. Oh, don't act like I'm the only one who... Yeah, all right.
100%.
So that's why it was very important for... So Kira has had a series of relationships.
Right.
Odo, as far as we've seen, has not.
Right.
We needed to see him have one and experience the loss of one
right.
to now be at a point where he can fully embrace the next one that comes along. And here they are, T and Kira up. Through the things in the background here that we are seeing.
Right. Okay. All right. I do appreciate, I want to say, your insight about Kira, because I wouldn't think about her too much, but you're right. When she was, like, intentionally blinding herself to Odo's interest, Dax on it, she's seeing all the signs, and Kira's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, okay. That's actually a good point. Yeah. Yeah, there's a reason why she might be pretending or telling herself that those things aren't happening. So...
Exactly.
Yeah. I guess going back, though, as you were talking, I was thinking, like, the thing about, for me, is the great link for Odo, while we did see that one moment where he did meld with the changeling woman for the first time, I guess, for me, the great link has always come off as a communal thing. Yes, it can be done between just two changelings, obviously, but the real full expression of it is in a communal sense. That's what changelings are. I'm not trying to say anything more than that. I'm just pointing out that that is what the Great Link is. I mean, there's a giant ocean of them all together on the planet doing it.
Yeah, they're all right.
So
now I will point out really quickly about the Great Link is that they intentionally make a lot of the language describing it very vague because it's supposed to be a concept that we as solids would not be able to fully grasp.
Right.
So it's more than just communal, it's more than sexual, it's more than, it's a whole other identity into itself.
Exactly, 100%.
So
what I'm getting at with all that is, if Odo is going to use humanoid sexual interaction as a substitute for that, I want to see more of the journey of the character as a changeling and what that means. What does it mean to be a changeling who's separated from other changelings, who's experienced the Great Link? What does it mean to try and kind of replace that with something else? Because for me, it's hard for me to really believe that Odo would ever be attracted to a singular person, in the sense that I don't think changelings are monogamous, quite frankly. I mean, I know that sounds weird in, like, what That sounds very weird and strange, and on screen would be very, very, very bizarre. It would be, but that's my point, is that he does come off to me as alien. That's part of what it means to be alien. And if he is going to be monogamous, which, I mean, quite frankly, I mean, I'm a humanoid. I like monogamous relationships. I'm not even, like, the point is that it even with Kira, it never feels to me like he... Look, it never feels to me like he has been committed to, like, a romantic relationship because he himself feels it as much as he, like, sees it outside of himself in, like, the other cultures, other people. And, like, he just wants something like that for himself, and so he's putting that on himself. Does that make sense?
So, it makes sense, but I'm going to argue with you. I'm going to refute you here.
Okay.
Because I believe that just like the instinctive desire for changelings to return home is implanted in them, I also think that they have an intense desire to be in the Great Link, to be connected.
Right.
So I always took his forlorn attitude and this isolationist and this loneliness, this intense loneliness that he has, is not because he just sees relationships and thinks that that's what he needs as a partner in that sense, but it's more because, remember, when we first meet Odo, he didn't know anything about where he was from or his people or anything. But I think that he still had these feelings, and I think that he basically was looking around at the various cultures and trying to basically assign a definition to the feeling that he was experiencing.
Right.
And when he saw the way that couples were happy together and did not have the loneliness feeling that he had,
right,
I think that's where that came from. Now, when you said you don't think that changelings are monogamous, in my head, I thought they're the ultimate in monogamy, because if you take what the female shapeshifter says when we first meet her, and she's talking to Odo about how their society works, she says that they all exist in the Great Link. They are, that is them.
Right.
And when he tries to ask her to distinguish between, like, him and herself and the others that are around and everything like that, she says that she tries to describe it as the ocean. She goes, if you pull a drop out of the ocean and then put it back in, there's no way to pull that same drop back out of the ocean. So they all become one, and then it separates out as needed or as whatever. So I think that they are just, it's a totally separate way of existing. And I think that that would also explain, again, why he felt that sense of longing, because he's the drop out of the ocean.
Right.
He has that longing to go back, to have that connection. And I also think that you're right, too, that he would have, if he had had a better frame of reference for the feeling when he was, you know, coming up with Dr. Mora and whatever else.
Right.
Probably would have been linking with a bunch of people all the time once he realized that he could. Just to establish something. But he had, again, he had no frame of reference for that. None whatsoever. It's not until after they find his people and he goes into the Great Link and he joins up with her and all those things does he start to begin to realize the potential of what he could have and what he's lost. And I think that's another reason why relationships also take on a different kind of meaning for him, because now instead of him just looking for anyone to share companionship with, he is becoming more and more focused, and that the love interest, the intensity of having that kind of connection is more important than just saying, you know, these people are my friends or I'm close to this one or whatever it is.
Right. Yeah. I would just, you know, the point that the whole ocean analogy is perfect, the drop in the ocean. Because for me, what I want for my heroic characters is I want them to white knight something. I want them to, like, take a stand on a certain issue and, like, fight for it to the death, kind of. And for me, what I want in this scenario for Odo is to take the idea, really embrace the idea of, I am going to commit to the humanoids. You know, I've been kind of abandoned by the changelings. And it's not that Odo is abandoning the changelings in return. I'm not saying that's what he's doing, but he He was briefly a humanoid, so, you know, it's too bad that the humanoid storyline has, unfortunately, kind of been lost for a bit. But if Odo had, in this episode, said out loud to someone, whether it's Kira in particular, you know, I can't stand this loneliness anymore. I really want to find some sort of intimacy with someone, and I know I can't find it in the same way that I would with changelings, but I want to do my best to try and find a way of doing it as a humanoid. Again, even though he's not a humanoid anymore, back to being a changeling, just recommit to that, even if that's what's necessary. I just wish that that had happened. I wish that that moment had come out, because what I'm getting at by saying all this is I felt like the twist was going to be that she had conned Odo the whole time. That the whole line about his bedroom eyes, when he asked, you know, who are you, or what, I don't know exactly what she says, but she says, oh, I've been waiting for you. You're the love of my life. And she was being sarcastic.
She gives one of those classic, she gives one of those classic film noir lines, you know,
right.
Are you waiting for someone? Yes, you, I've been waiting for you my entire life. Like that's straight out of a 40s film.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I was just waiting for the twist to be that she really is some sort of super criminal, and she knew she had to make a play on Odo, and Odo fell for it hook, line, and sinker. And that was the twist I was waiting to happen the whole time, is that poor Odo had fallen for the oldest trick in the book, if only because he's lonely and he's not quite a humanoid and everyone's fallen for it once and it's his turn. So it didn't go that way, obviously. It did go a different route. But the reason that was kind of frustrating for me is because I felt the whole time that was going to be the twist. I wasn't surprised when she tried taking the crystal and running away with it. She beat up poor O'Brien, you know. I was laughing because, you know, you've told me that the line is O'Brien must suffer. I was like, yep, there he goes.
O'Brien must suffer, yes.
Oh, speaking of which, we have to talk about the whole Hollow Suite situation. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, we'll get there. A couple of things about that for sure. Yeah.
That was funny. But, yeah, so I don't object to the idea of we have an episode where Odo finally had a romantic relationship. I just wish it hadn't jumped straight to bed with silly, cheesy lines and a character who felt deceptive the whole time. I just want Odo, and again, other characters as well, to have a little more. I want a sweet romance somewhere along the line. His dead wife, you know, when she comes back, something like that. But sorry, keep going.
That was bittersweet. That wasn't sweet.
But bittersweet is still more what I'm talking about than this. Like,
I would have
Dax banter. It's bittersweet is what I would love.
Yeah, I would have loved that they had done that. Like you said, they made her. You know, she's married at the end. They could have given this any other kind of ending. It really feels like, again, they were trying to take old beats from the 40s and 50s movies and stuff, and they tried to redress them in this 24th century getup. Like, this is, you know, almost Casablanca-ish with the ending, and they're in love with each other, but they can't stay together because she's something amazing and important, or in this case, she's married and she's a cop and she's whatever. She's got this important thing she's got to go do. There's no way for them to be together and to stay together, you know. Again, the first moments that we meet her, she's delivering lines from the 40s movies, and he's the man who walked up to the woman with a problem in the bar of all places, you know. Just a lot of that, which I felt like would have made sense had we had more time to see the development, but we just don't get it.
Right.
We just don't get it at all. And I think that's why this falls apart. I do also want to talk really quick about the assassins who have come, the Fenian assassins, two gentlemen. They have got to be the most low-key, chill assassins I've ever seen portrayed in anything. The guy,
they're part of the Orion syndicate.
Right.
Yeah.
They're just completely unbothered by anything. Just,
I thought it was on stun. I'm like,
look what you did to
the Orion syndicate?
Right.
These are supposed to be the super complicated, super deadly, we never let anyone get away from us syndicate. Like,
yeah.
You guys are sending your, not like, this is the, I mean, not the B team, not the C team, nothing. This is the D team. Like, what's going on?
They were just totally chill about everything. They're eating burritos in the cargo bay.
Yeah,
at one point they're watching her in the bar and stuff, just chilling. He's like, oh, I don't want to kill her. She's pretty. Yeah. That's why you don't want to kill her? That's it? I mean, come on.
And line was so on the nose, too. Oh, hey, this is a pretty character, and she's having a relationship with one of our characters, so let's have someone else mention that she's pretty just to, like, nail it home.
Oh, I don't want to kill the pretty ones. Oh, okay. That's great.
Yeah, yeah, and the whole, like, the whole transfer of the data, the crystal, data crystal, and he like, yeah, I want you to meet my associate. Like, the whole thing was so B-team, so, like, these guys are amateurs. Like,
I didn't really necessarily take them as amateurs so much as they just didn't care, like, at all. They were just thoroughly unbothered by everything. Yeah. They're beating the guy up. He's like, oh, we don't really want to do this to you, slap. You know, it's just like...
That's true. Yeah, at the beginning even, when they kill the guy, yeah, it's all like, it's all, yeah, they're all just over it. Oh, goodness.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
There's just one other thing about the relationship with Dax and Carissa here, whatever her name is. When they're in bed and they're like both stroking each other.
Hang on, I'm going to have to stop you because you said Dax and
Odo. Yeah,
so you clearly meant Odo and Arissa. All right, now that we've got our character straight, go ahead.
Odo. When they're like stroking each other, I guess the other thing is, like, Odo has been looking at people's faces for a long time. He studies faces. And like, when he's stroking her face, it just, like, I felt like he should be kind of doing like this, you know, like I had never really ever touched someone's face before. Like, he's too intimate. It's just too on it. We've already said it. I'll just move beyond it. It's just felt a lot of place. Yeah.
I do often wonder about it. Was that so much a director's choice, or was this the actor's choice? You know, maybe probably a little bit of both. I mean, they're supposed to be, you know, showing they're in an intimate setting with each other. Right. There's a closeness. I get it. But yeah, this is one of those things, again, I just feel like Star Trek does not handle well. At least it didn't at this time. You know, the 80s and 90s was an awkward time for sexual expression, and not necessarily saying that it's gotten any better per se, but I think that, you know, newer shows tend to handle relationships with what I feel is a better sense of normalcy than what we see in some of these shows. Like, we can see the beginnings of it. Like, again, I'm going to point to Sisko and Cassidy. We see, you know, beginnings of it here in Trek, but I don't feel like they really started to understand it until later. And that might have just been when writers and producers and executive whomever the heck's, you know, retired or phased out and new people were brought in. And so new ideas brought about a new kind of representation. Right. So maybe that's why I feel like they do it better on some of the newer shows. But yeah, a lot of the shows in the 90s era, they don't do it well. And, you know, part of it is also that whole, we're supposed to believe these characters met each other and they're in, you know, falling in love with each other within like days, because they don't do a good job of communicating time. And so it's very hard for us as an audience to follow that pattern, because it's like at the beginning of the episode, they were antagonistic. By the middle of the episode, they're in bed together. And you're missing several beats, you know?
Yeah, and Odo was willing to quit his job on the station.
Yeah, he was already saying,
bodyguard.
Like, yeah, as long as it takes, I don't care. I'll take a personal leave of absence. I mean, the man was already just totally simping, man. He was ready to give up everything to go and be with this woman.
She said bedroom, and he was like, I'm there, baby.
Yeah. Which one, mine or yours? Mine yeah. or yours? And yeah. I'm down, you know.
Yeah, and I so, love how he didn't tell her the plan until he brought her to his quarters. Like, I feel like most women would be like, hell no, bro. I don't know how closely you're going to be protecting me against whoever, but what are you doing taking me to your own quarters?
So, of course, we can't round out our episode without talking about the return of our Julian Bashir spy novels. We see a brief return here. O'Brien is back as the Falcon. Bashir is our man, Bashir, of course.
Yeah.
And then we have the other characters. We didn't get to see Dax as her holodeck queen, counterpart. Right?
Yeah.
She wasn't the queen. She was supposed to assassinate the queen. Ah, she was so brainwashed to assassinate the queen, and right. Julian's mission was to stop her.
Right. And Odo was supposed to get the girl, but that's what triggers him from leaving the group. He's like, oh, I don't want to have to pretend to be the one to get the girl. And so Bashir steps in quite gallantly.
Well, of course. I mean, now, I just wanted to mention that because it turns out that they had actually planned on there being significantly more to the holodeck scenes and the characters and the full regalia and everything else. But all of that had to be put to a halt because Paramount was served with a cease and desist order from the powers that be at James Bond and Co., basically. Because of our man Bashir, the episode we had seen earlier, was such a intensive take on that Bond world. Yeah, so they were basically being told that if you don't stop, we're gonna sue you. So they gave us some, but they were very narrow in what they were allowed to show. So that's why we did not get any more of that. The cease and desist order was quite emphatic.
That's hilarious. That is so funny because that's the whole point about both Bond and making fun of it is it's so over the top. Mm-hmm. Bashir says it in the episode. He's with the blonde woman in the back of the limo, and he says, "You just jumped out of a moving plane. And not a hair on your head is out of place."
Yeah.
And I just feel like he's the cheesiest son of a gun. Like, I don't, like, what woman ever fell for any of Bashir's lines, really?
I love it. I love it. I think I love it for that reason right there. He's supposed to be this, you know, the playboy doctor or whatever. And he's supposed to come off as Mr. Suave and Smooth. And I love the fact that the only time we ever see him having any legitimate success, at least for now, is in the holodeck. I think that's hilarious. Yeah. I don't know if that was intended to be a joke, but I laugh. I laugh frequently when I think about
even,
that.
Yeah, even what's her face left the Dabo girl left him. For Nog of all people.
For Rom.
Rom. That's right, Rom, not Nog.
I'm not gonna fault Julian for that. Lita clearly has issues. That's just
100%. She has issues. She has issues. So. But yeah, the one moment, though, that I really loved at the whole Holosuite moment is because before they go in there and they're talking about it, when O'Brien finds out he's the villain still, he's like, oh, I always have to play the villain. And then the other said, well, you're so good at it. And then when he showed up with the gun.
And the eye patch.
And he growled and he was gruff. He really did nail it, man. I was like, they're right. He's a great villain. What did he say?
He does play mean very well.
Mr. Bashir. It's like
Odo interrupted us. He goes, "Well, you know what they say about picking up hitchhikers."
That was great.
But he does play mean very well. As a side, if you ever want to see some Star Trek actors do other things, you should watch a show called Hell on Wheels. Miles O'Brien is in Hell on Wheels, as is before he was cast as Captain Pike. Captain Pike, Anson Mount, is in Hell on Wheels as well. Both of them do a great job in that show. I ended up watching it one night by accident. And before I knew it, I'd watched like 2 seasons. And I was like, why didn't I know anything about this show? And then by the time I was like investigating it, and it was already over. And I was like, oh my God. And so like I ended up watching the whole thing. It was a great show. But Anson Mount and Cole Meany, who of course plays Chief O'Brien, are in that show. And again, he plays mean very well. He does a great job in that show of being this kind of ruthless railroad tycoon who's trying to keep a tight lid on things for various reasons. So yeah, go watch it if you're interested.
It was called again, Hell and what?
Hell on Wheels.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Set shortly after the Civil War, and how everybody is now trying to make the mass move west, and they're building a railroad, the Transcontinental Railroad, to connect all the way across. So yeah.
Okay.
Very interesting show. Now we have a few characters who get very little screen time, so we're going to just wrap this up by giving them a quick, brief, you know, wink and a nod, because they were only in the show briefly. And that would, of course, be Worf and Sisko, who Worf is mad at Jadzia for gossiping with Kira about Odo's rendezvous.
Highly activities.
Yeah, yeah. But my favorite part has got to be Sisko when he comes in and he's like, where's Odo? He asked me to arrange a meeting with Starfleet Intelligence at 0800. And I'm like, he's late. What? He's never late. Well, he's never spent the night with a woman before. And he goes, with a woman?
A woman.
And he goes, that's nice. I was like, Sisko.
Yeah.
Like,
Sisko.
Just a few moments the man can make any scene. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And, then when, of course, Odo walks through. Yeah.
Yeah.
Odo walks through and he's like, okay. Let's go. You know, it was great. It's a great moment for all of them. I love it. And I love the way that their whole group seems to really kind of mesh well, even in small scenes like that. And I mean, that's all he did. He walked out of his office, walked down the steps. He said a couple of quick things to his friends and then he's gone again.
Yep.
It's like, great delivery, man. You're great. But yeah, he was like, with a woman. That's nice.
Yeah. And Quark at the beginning of the episode when he was hitting on what's-her-face.
Orisa, yeah.
Orisa, and he's, I can keep an eye on more than one thing at a time.
And he does that, and he does that thing, and he says, you know, she's clearly not interested. She doesn't want anything. And he goes, how would I know if I don't offer? And he sticks his finger in the pudding or whatever and tries to serve it to her off the tip of his finger. He's always doing that. It's disgusting. I don't know who told him to do that. It's awful. I hate seeing it.
Yeah. You have to wonder how Ferengi romances go with like that. If he if everything's a transaction in Ferengi society, how do they have any sort of romance? I mean, maybe it's the point they don't. But I mean, like, even that, like, flirtation, I don't know. I guess we'll never find out. Don't want to find out now that I think about it. Like, put it out of your mind. You never want to go there. Never mind.
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, because the way that, you know, from what little information we've gleaned from what Quark has said through the intervening episodes, I feel like on Ferenginar, love is definitely an afterthought. And I feel like it's something that they probably didn't learn as a culture or society until they started getting out and having interactions with other cultures, other societies, because, you know, again, for them, everything is transactional. Everything is a business. So the thought of having to woo or seduce someone doesn't make sense when you're just going to sign a contract.
Right.
You know? And he even teases Rom about it. You know, when we saw in the last episode, he teases Rom. He's like, you had a standard contract with your wife, and then you went and fell in love with her, and then she robbed you blind. So it's just like you know, it's like they don't do that. And it's not until they had to, you know, be around people, probably in particular humans.
How did she rob him blind if women in Ferengi society aren't allowed to own anything? I'm very
well. It was her father. So he had a standard contract with the father for her marriage. And then when he fell in love with her, the father renegotiated the contract, which then took all the money and allowed her to leave him and be married off to someone else.
Right.
So he was stuck raising the child while she went off to the next husband in the line, and her father was now made significantly richer because he took everything that Rom had.
Well, I don't know how much richer Rom made him, but at least why well, whatever amount that was.
I mean, yeah, we don't know how much it was, but we do. I feel like it's intimated that he had a substantial amount of money, because that's why they entered into the contract in the first place. So how he got that money, I don't know, but it seems like that was kind of the whole point of the marriage, was that he had the money to do it, and right. they just wanted to get their hooks into him, and they succeeded. Right. So,
yeah.
Well, final thoughts on A Simple Investigation?
I feel like it could have been better. I mean, I feel like you have stronger feelings about it than I do. I mean, I was more like, eh, it's an eh episode. You're more like a eh episode.
Well, when you've watched it enough and you see the way that it kind of derails your favorite characters, absolutely, you know. But yeah, like I said, it's still kind of a cringy episode for me. I wish that certain things had, you know, played out better. I agree with you that we needed a bigger plot twist than what we got. I also feel like we didn't need to delve into the whole changeling virginity thing that we got. There are some funny moments, but they're so few and far between that it's not enough to save the episode. So hopefully next week when we are on a different episode, we can have something better. Right. So that's all I'll say.
Right.
Well, all right, guys, I think that's going to wrap it up for us tonight for this episode of The Fire Caves. You can find us and follow us anywhere you happen to do all your social medias. Facebook is probably going to be the most prominent right now. I've wholly given up on Twitter. As for listening to us, you can listen to us anywhere that you happen to listen to podcasts. I do it on Spotify. And don't forget to check out our live show on YouTube. And if you see the live show, great. If you don't get to tune in for the live one, you can, of course, go and watch the episodes later on. They're going to be up for a while. And one more time, special shout out to Vincent, who was the winner of our medallion contest. I hope that you are enjoying it. So until next week, guys, take care of yourselves.
Thanks, guys.